Welcome into the latest installment of the Golf Channel podcast. I'm your host, Will Gray, joined by my brother-in-arms here, GolfChannel.com's own senior writer, Ryan Lavner. Lav, we are half of the GC.com task force up here in Wisconsin this week. But
reporting live from the Sheraton.
The beautiful media hotel. Yeah. That's an unsponsored plug, as we say.
We will take Marriott points, though, if anyone would like to send us some.
Well, they got a point share thing going on here. It'll be a good week.
Any more would be appreciated.
Of course, always. We trade in them as our basic currency. So we have to start with the course, because everyone's talking about the course, because it's Wednesday night as we're taping this, and no one has hit a meaningful golf shot yet. So we don't have any actual golf to talk about. So we're talking course. You were up here 6 years ago for the U.S. Amateur, the Kelly Craft one. I guess, what are your thoughts on the course as we've seen it this week, now that we've had a couple days on site, versus maybe what you remembered 6 years ago?
Yeah, 6 years ago, I'm not sure if it's the mark of a good course, but I literally could not remember a single hole. And that I played the course the day after, which is definitely not a good sign.
Your opinion, though, was endorsed by Spieth, who said Tuesday.
He said he didn't remember anything.
Yeah.
He said he remembered the last couple holes, he remembered the first hole, which is a really tough par five. So I don't think it left a great impression from players in 2011. It played completely different. It was brown. It was firm and fast. And unfortunately, we've had some rain so far this week, so it's a little bit greener. It's a little bit mushier than the USGA probably intended. The fescue is also playable, which is a I think a big difference from what you're going to see this week. Now the fairways, I don't recall them being quite as wide as they are here. Mm-hmm. We're talking 50, 60 yard wide corridors, which is...
I feel like I could hit these fairways, which I don't usually say like, the U.S.
It,
Open.
It definitely like engenders confidence when you're standing on the tee that I can actually hit this fairway, even if it does take a weird bounce. You're still going to be maybe just in that first cut of rough. But if you do blow it completely offline, or if the wind picks up, if it's blowing 15-20 and your ball kind of sails in the wind,
we could
see some lost balls. We could see some unplayable lies. We could see some scorecard devastation. But I think it's an interesting test. I think you're talking to some players, they seem to be pleasantly surprised by what they've seen. The barrier or their thought process has been so skewed by what we've seen at the U.S. Open over the last couple years that really they could only improve on that this year.
Under promise and over deliver.
That's exactly right. I think that's exactly what we've seen this week.
You think these guys are shell-shocked still a little bit from Chambers Bay?
I think there's anytime you go to someplace new, there's a scariness involved. I mean, Steve Stricker has played here because he lives an hour from here. Jordan Niebrugge has played. He told me about a dozen rounds here. You've had, I think it was, 18 players who played at the U.S. Amateur in 2011, something along those lines. Those are the only people who have seen this golf course, other than the guys who maybe came up a week or two ago to get an early look. So anytime there's new PGA Tour players, tend to get a little bit scared off. But I think...
Well, I think that
in this time of practice, they've been pleasantly surprised.
The thought is that new is always scary, but I think that was reinforced 2 years ago when they kind of went in and they said, "All right, we're going to check it out."
But I love Chambers Bay,
and you love Chambers Bay.
The USGA destroyed it. They destroyed it. They killed the greens the weekend before that course. When you look at what happened, the U.S. Amateur in 2010, they threw water on that course. It was a disaster during the stroke play qualifying. Spieth said, I think he shot like 78 that round of qualifying. He said it was the hardest round he's ever played in his life. They threw water on it, and then you had terrific match play. You ended up having number one versus number two. Number one prevailed. You look at the U.S. Open in 2015. Jordan Spieth was number two at the time, beating Dustin Johnson. Rory was up there. Adam Scott was up there. Louis was up there. It was a terrific leaderboard. That course does produce good winners, assuming the USGA doesn't completely destroy the greens and have them putting on broccoli and cauliflower and every other assorted thing in the freezer aisle.
But it seems like Aaron Hills has not been killed by the USGA.
No.
It helps that the course has been closed all year, so no one's played
perfectly.
It all spring.
Everyone's remarked how it's perfectly manicured. They're saying these are the best greens you'll ever find for US Open. They're beautiful, bent grass. It looks like you might actually see made putts. US Open,
do you think, and I agree with that, and I think that we've heard from a lot of guys that the green surfaces are more playable, more friendly, just less penal than what they're used to, especially for this tournament. So do you think that that brings in guys like Hideki, like Adam Scott, the ball strikers whose weakness has always been with the putter, that now maybe that's a little neutralized?
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of the storyline heading in here was, man, you look at this scorecard, it's 77 100 yards is just kind of some sticker shock. But, you know, listen to what the players had to say. It seems like it's going to be a second shot golf course. You know, if you can really hit your irons, you know, 15, 20 feet from the flag, I think you're going to see some birdies. And this course is different in that it's got closely mown areas around the green. So even the guys, I mentioned Martin Keimer for our punch as a potential sleeper. He's a guy who you put him in normal circumstances, his chipping and putting usually lets him down. But if he's able to putt like he was at Pinehurst in 2014, you're going to see some creativity. I think everyone's going to make putts because these are just beautiful bank grass greens. I think it's whoever hits the ball closest to the hole.
But Rory said yesterday, you say it's an iron test. Rory said it's driver and putter, that those are going to be the two clubs.
I think for Rory in particular, okay, it's driver and putter.
All right.
Just as it is every single week. I think the question was, what are the two most important clubs for you? It's always driver and putter.
Right.
That's always what he's going to. I do think it's a second shot golf course. Everyone's going to be playing from the fairway. I mean, if you're hitting pitching wedge as opposed to 7-iron, that's certainly going to be an advantage. Length plays well everywhere, but certainly irons are going to come into
any player opinions affected positively or negatively in the couple days since we've been here, or since you had a chance to talk to guys that maybe you were high on before and now you're backing off, or the other way around, that you weren't thinking about and now you say, I think you might have a shot?
I think at the beginning of the week, I thought it was just going to be a bomber. I thought it was going to be a John Rahm. I thought it was going to be a Dustin Johnson. I thought it was going to be a Ricky. I think this brings in more of like a Kevin Kisner type.
Kisner's getting a lot of love. Very trendy sleeper.
A Charles Schwartzel type. A player like that who's not necessarily a bomber. Kisner's certainly not a bomber.
Yeah.
But they're scrappy. I do think because we've seen the rain that's come through, the rain that's in the forecast, I do think you're going to see a winning score somewhere between 5 and 10 under.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I guess, 7. Speed said 5 to 10 under.
I said 6.
Probably a good guess. Randy Mell throwing out 12 under par.
He loves the par 5s.
Thinks we're going to have congressional all over again. But I do think when you do have that kind of winning score and this kind of softness, it does bring more players into play, like a Kisner type who maybe hits it 280, 290 off the tee. But they can still, you know, they can still put up a number.
Are we taking the USGA at face value with the fescue trimming? That was all premeditated and all based on the rain, and there's nothing to see here, that we're not a little shell shocked and trying to keep the players in our good graces?
I mean, I think whatever happens this week, the video of the week is Lee Westwood and his caddy Billy Foster
crawling
through the fescue. He's nowhere to be seen, and then he just he reappears. That's how deep the fescue is. If their story is to be believed, and that they had consulted with the superintendent, and the superintendent said, hey, we're going to get some rain here tonight and Tuesday morning, the fescue is going to lie down, it's going to be thicker, it's going to be not how we want to play. If that's actually true, the forecast hasn't really changed. They should have done that over the weekend and cleaned it out, thinned it out.
Well, no, if it's true, you got to wait for the rain to actually come and then go, because forecasts are wrong. Just because it says it's going to rain 4 days,
I believe, from now. Kevin Na's video was on
Sunday. Right.
So go ahead and thin it out then.
Okay,
it's clearly unplayable.
But their point is, they said, you know, their thought is it wasn't unplayable then, that it was the rain that we got here Monday and then into Tuesday.
Kevin Na would disagree,
but I'm saying that according to the testimony from the USGA, it was the Monday Tuesday rain that then all of a sudden they got people back together. You know, Monday afternoon and Tuesday morning, and said, "All right, this is too much. Yeah. Now we got to pull."
I mean, the timing's super curious, isn't it? Like, if you have all these videos, all these comments, players talk about the fescue, how unplayable it is, and then you are trimming it, it doesn't look good. The optics are not good for the USGA. I don't have a problem with this unplayable fescue. I really don't. I mean, if you're blowing it that far offline, you should be punished. Whether it's a lost ball, whether it's an unplayable lie, whether it's just a 25-yard hack out back to the fairway, I mean, if you hit a bad shot, you should be penalized. And the problem with the fescue, how it was, is you had a 60-yard wide fairway, you had like 3 or 4 yards of this 4 to 5 inch, you know, first cut of rough. Then you had the unplayable fescue; you're not going to find your ball. And then 10 yards left or right of that, it was actually sitting down okay. It wasn't that long, and you could play from there and actually hit it on the green.
I think, as you said, it's the opposite of graduated rough.
Yes, right? They have this whole graduated rough concept that Mike Davis came out with. It's the opposite of that. And so that's what they didn't like to see. And so if you can thin it out in some of those locations where it wasn't playing properly, I'm okay with that. But, I mean, this is the U.S. Open. If you hit a bad shot, you should be penalized for it.
I just think if it was the Masters and Augusta, they would have been done last night, and we would have never seen it, and there would be no sign that any
doing it in the
mower,
middle of a practice round was very curious.
Any mower was even there. But yeah, I do think I was surprised they did it in the middle of the day when it was absolutely going to gain
TV
attention.
TV cameras were rolling.
Right.
I actually didn't think about that.
Yeah.
They have mowers with lights on them.
Yeah, just do it.
You could have easily done that
at night.
It was almost like they were trying to prove a point, like, hey, players, we're listening to you.
Yeah.
We're not going to get this one out of control like we've had the last couple U.S. Opens. We're actually listening to you this time.
Are you excited that there are only a few hours left for Phil Mickelson to be a storyline in the 2017 U.S. Open?
This storyline, I'm so tired of this. Can we, first of all, the Masters doesn't add up. And when we're taping this podcast, it's almost 8 o'clock here in the Central Time Zone. The forecast for tomorrow is 87, partly cloudy, 10% chance of rain.
I saw this morning it said abundant sunshine.
Yeah. there you go. Yeah. Just like Southern California.
Exactly.
So it's just not going to happen. And I guess I saw a report before we went on here. Phil Mickelson told Tim Rosenfort that if the forecast looks good in the morning, he's going to call the USGA, make sure Bobby Diaz has a full warm up and he's ready and prepared to play with Stuart Sink and Steve Stricker. But not just the fact that the timing just wasn't going to work out, like, it's with the forecast, it's just not feasible. The fact that he'd be coming in sight unseen, relying on Bones for literally every tee shot, every iron shot, and every putt was just ridiculous. He wasn't going to contend anyway. Let's just move on to Shinnecock at this point.
Yeah, and I don't even know, even if he could play 2 weeks worth of practice rounds, I don't know that this was ever going to be a Phil venue. We'll never know if that played into it.
I mean,
you can put your conspiracy theory tin hat on all you want and say if this was Shinnecock this year and Aaron Hills is next year,
or Pebble
or Wingfoot or whatever, if it was a Phil venue, if things would have played out differently, totally understand his priorities wanting to be there for his daughter giving a commencement speech at graduation. That's an important thing, but... Yeah, flying in hot is an understatement for what he was planning to do in a best-case scenario.
I think given the proper preparation, I think he actually could have fared well. The fairways are wide, and you can be so creative around some of these greens. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's actually still a pretty good putter, even though he's, you know, 46, 47 years old. I actually think...
Happy birthday, Phil, on Friday,
happy
by
birthday,
the way.
Phil. Would have been a good test. Completely overlooked is that his son, Evan... Today was his 8th grade graduation. So it was all about this commencement speech with Amanda. Phil had flown back and forth from Marion for Amanda's 8th grade graduation. Yep. What about Evan? No love for Evan. Graduating from 8th grade today. Just completely overlooked by Phil
we'll have to
golf fan.
Do a deep dive on the Mickelson family tree here later. But I'm just excited that we're going to get... Just move on. This is
Bobby Diaz is going to... Yeah. Throw up a 66 tomorrow. And
perfect. That'd be fine. And think about this. If Ryan Moore, this would have been a good story. If Ryan Moore doesn't WD last week and get, I think Michael Putnam was the section alternate that got in. If that didn't happen, we would have Drew Love would be the guy on the hot seat waiting with Davis to see if he can get Phil's spot. That would have been.
And you don't think Davis is going to be sending him a little note saying, go ahead and WD now. Forecast looks awfully good for us here.
Yes.
Here outside Milwaukee.
I told you earlier, this is the first time I've met Drew Love. He is a mountain of a man.
Oh, towers, he doesn't look anything like his father.
He towers over DL3.
Yeah. DL3's got like this, kind of got scrawny legs. Drew Love is an absolute monster. Redhead, that kind of came out of nowhere with the first time I met him. Big kid. I'm curious to see what he actually does. He just turned pro after a kind of an up-and-down career at Alabama. He's battled some injuries. I'm curious to see... I don't think he's going to have certainly the career that his father had, but I'll be curious to see if he has some staying power in the pro ranks. I'm not sold completely yet.
If we're doing a pre-tournament stock watch, give me someone who you're buying low on. Who's going to surprise and maybe overshoot the expectations this week?
You know what? Stuart Hagestad was the low am at the Masters. He finished, I think, top 30 there.
26th, I think.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he's top 20, top 15 at the U.S. Open. This guy's really good. There's talk about, like, what are you doing Why are you not giving Pro Golf a shot? He's
26, 27, something like that?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So he's completely put his career, he wants to go to business school. He's put that on the back burner. He's dedicating himself to golf 24/7. He wants to play on the Walker Cup team, and then he'll go to grad school after that. This kid is really good. He's still got that Bernhard Langer type.
The iffy anchor. I see on the putting green, and you look at it, and it's like, how is that different than what we were doing?
We could have some slow mo replays. certainly, I think he's a guy that could surprise. I don't know who else you got as a potential sleeper.
I threw in Shane Lowry for our punch out. I think that
We saw him in the merchandise.
We did.
Tent.
We saw him in the merch tent. He's picking up
good spirits.
He was picking up plenty of swag for friends and family. But he's just a guy that loves tough golf courses. I mean, he won at Firestone. He should have won last year, but he should have played better than he did in the final round.
Yeah, that was kind of a four-shot lead. Yeah.
But still finished second last year. Was ninth at Chambers. I just think that the tougher, the better for him. And he is a guy who goes really, when he's going cold, he goes really cold. And he had a few months in the fall and into the early part of this year where he just did not have it. But I think he's turned it around. Sixth at Wentworth, 15th at Memorial. He's a guy that's going to avoid the fescue for the most part. As you said, second shot golf course, give himself a lot of opportunities. I think he could be a guy to watch. But we said, you know, Kisner is getting a lot of love. I think Schwartzel is a guy that you mentioned earlier that could definitely contend and win. I think he's 50-1 or something like that. That's way too
high. Really? Wow.
That's way too high right now. I think he's...
Louis wouldn't surprise you if he won.
Louis's really going with the mountain man look in the beard. I saw him today on the range.
Yes.
He has grown it out.
Yep. He's completely lost all sense of what he should be doing facially.
It's Mr. Facial Hair.
But I think it's more wide open than maybe we would have said 3 days ago if we'd done this podcast. I think you could see a bomber win here. I think you could see a medium length hitter. I think you could see a Kisner type. I still can't shake the feeling that it's going to be a... I think it's probably just selfish because we have to write stories about actually what happens at the U.S. Open. And no offense to Mark Leishman, but a Jordan Spieth or a DJ or a Rahm or a Ricky would all be better stories. I just feel like it is going to be a big name who comes to the top. There's guys who are playing well enough now to justify that type of feeling.
Anyone on the flip side of the coin that you think could be heading for a trunk slam Friday afternoon?
Well, you know what? We were talking with Rex Hoggard, our colleague, and Jason Day, five of the six appearances he's made at the U.S. Open, he's finished in the top 10. It seems like he's always...
Four in a row.
Yeah, he's a perfect one-and-done type pick. But he had talking to Cole Swat and Day's caddy, he said, you know, Jason kind of... He looks out there. It's... You can see 10 holes at one time. There's just a lot going on. He wasn't necessarily sure or convinced that Day's going to have a good week here. I'm not sure if maybe he turns on his blinders tomorrow. I think
will that add to the pre-shot routine? Is the part it's turning on the blinders? Does that come after the closing of the eyes visualization?
Yeah, I mean, he does this whole visualization routine that could be thrown off. Although he despite the vertigo, he still played well
Chambers
at Chambers Bay, which is a similar type golf course visually with some blind shots and some intricacies, but he's, I think, a player to keep an eye on because I think he'd be a popular pre-tournament pick.
Yeah, I think he definitely would, but yeah,
He's just a tick off. Tick off this year.
I talked to Bones, not to go back to the Phil thing, but to your point that he said this course of all courses for Phil to play blind, it's so complicated that you go to most courses and you might have three or four things to think about on a tee when you're looking out on a shot, visualizing the hole. And here, there are 12 different ways that you can go on any single hole and trying to play. I mean, you get these holes that have 7-8 tee boxes in it. We were out there on the ninth hole for a while yesterday. There's more tee boxes than there is room on the green from up on the top of that hill. So many options. You know that the USGA is going to be hands-on, that you're not playing the same course 4 days in a row. You're playing four different courses, and you're not going to know until the morning of which course you're getting, whether, you know, the first hole is playing 560 or 630 and is 18, 620 or 680.
There's 14 of the 18 holes have some kind of blind shot.
Yeah.
So when you start moving around tee boxes at different angles, then you've got different starting points and starting lines. For someone who'd be coming in sight unseen like Phil, it's a lot to handle. But I think preparation for these guys would be even more key this week. It's tough because you don't want to overextend yourself and try out every scenario because then you've got way too much information.
Right.
But then you also don't want to have a Furyk situation at Olympic where you're caught ill-prepared for what happens, you know, when the scores actually matter.
I do feel like guys get so exact, especially with this event, of I want to play 9 holes here in the morning. I want to play 9 holes in the afternoon here. This is, instead of, you know, if you show up to St. Jude Classic last week in Memphis, you're going to go out, play a practice round, go get a bite to eat, and go do it again tomorrow. But these guys were, whether I want to play at this time and with this easterly breeze or whatever. And then a lot of those plans went out the window this afternoon when they blew the horn at probably about 3 o'clock, 3:30 mm-hmm. local time.
Overthinking's part of the U.S. Open.
That's part of it, right? The space between the ears is is always an issue when it comes to a U.S. Open and a USGA event.
Yep.
But all right, we'll wrap this up. Make it simple. Give me a winner. Who you got?
God, it feels like every time I pick this guy, he just completely implodes.
I'm going to say the same thing about my guy. So you go first.
I've sworn off picking him. I'm going with Ricky Fowler. I have to go with, like, it just...
This is bad that you and I are agreeing.
So, oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say the same thing.
All right. So I actually do believe this is his time. When you look at... you could look at any statistic you want.
Leads
entering,
in total?
Entering last week, he was total strokes gain total.
So he's second now in strokes gain. He leads in total driving, which is distance plus accuracy. Third in scoring average. Third in birdies, which there aren't going to be that many of this week.
His putting is so much improved over the last couple years. And I think the big thing, especially for the U.S. Open, he just has this unflappableness about him. He's kind of like DJ. He's going to let things, you know, kind of roll off his back. He's not going to get too flustered where a Spieth might, you know, let it affect him, or John Rahm mm-hmm. might let it affect him for a couple holes. He's just not going to have that. So Ricky's my guy. He's sure to disappoint.
Yes.
But he's the guy I'm rolling with.
This is probably the third time that I have just thrown myself on the Fowler bandwagon.
Last year's Masters is a big one.
Last year's Masters, I think everyone was in on it, and he missed the cut in spectacular fashion. And I said, never again. I'm not going back down this rabbit hole. And here we are once again. We've talked ourselves back into it 14 months later. He's just been so solid this spring. You know, he was fourth at Phoenix, and they got that win at the Honda, and has been 12th, 16th,
8th. Got the girlfriend. He seems to be in a good place.
We see what it did with Sergio.
The girlfriend
happy
bump.
Life. Yeah, exactly. Certainly translated into some on-course success, but...
I think if we're doing... You do the power rankings, right?
Yeah.
I think if you're doing a power ranking...
I still left DJ one.
DJ is still number one. I put Ricky second.
Yep.
I would put Spieth third.
I went Rahm third.
Okay. I would put J-Day or Rahm 4 or 5. I think those are kind of a toss-up.
And you got to put Adam Scott in there, too, this week, I think, because he has also been solid. I like what he's doing.
He's like the 38th ranked putter on the PGA Tour. Yeah. That does not match the eye test. If he can somehow shake in a few 15-footers... 100% he'll be there.
I like that he's overhauled the schedule this year. He's playing the week before every major. He went to Memphis last week, adding the week before with the intention of getting Stevie on the bag 1 week early. So he's
getting in a rhythm.
So he gets in a rhythm. Top 10 last week at Memphis. No one's talking about him. I put him in that Schwartzel bandwagon of a guy who it would not at all surprise you to win, but a guy who's also not getting any attention early.
He's
in the
week. He's in the Schwartzel, Oosthuizen. Who else would be in kind of that? It doesn't really
Keimer.
Matter. Keimer. That Westwood.
Yeah.
That kind of, if it's all about the putter. Yeah. If they can somehow make some 15-footers, Hideki, then they can challenge the Spieths and the DJs and the Rickies.
Who, if I give you a head-to-head matchup, who do you take in, DJ or Spieth?
DJ. Yeah. I think length, the way that he drives the golf ball, I would give him the edge on Spieth.
All right. I think it'll be close.
And Spieth's putter's still a little bit uncertain.
You're not buying into the Colonial.
We talked about that Stockwatch. I completely forgot again. Yes. Rory. We have not mentioned Rory once. I'd be down on Rory this week.
You'd be down on Rory?
I'd be down on Rory this week.
Really? I'm up on Rory.
See, he's breaking in all 14 clubs. That's still breaking in the new ball. It's going to be windy. He's had issues with the Pro V1 that he was playing at the Masters. He didn't like the way the ball was reacting. This would be certainly a good
test.
But
if it's soft, it's I mean, yeah, the wind's going to blow, but it's not going to blow 30 like it would at a
supposed
at
to blow 25 on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But my point is, if it's soft with these greens, you're not going to get like at Augusta where you hit it and it's going to roll off. You're going to be able to control
your ball. I'm off. He's played one tournament in the last 80-something days. There's got to be some competitive rust there.
I like the fact that he can just ride that driver. And you can say the same thing about DJ and Fowler and a bunch of other guys. Just give me the driver. I'm not trying to, work a three hybrid in there.
He can still make mistakes from the middle of the fairway.
He can. So can we all.
Yes. He would be a guy... who did I don't even remember who I mentioned for the potentially going down. There was some. There was some J Day.
Yes, it was. It was Day
issues.
Yes,
that was I would it. Be more down on Rory.
Okay, so you're swapping out for all our loyal listeners that are still with us here at the 25 minute mark.
Can we splice this and get Rory as my potentially down?
It's late on Wednesday. I don't know how much splicing technology we have available to us, but we will ad lib it for sure.
Duly noted.
Duly noted. You're leaving Day back in the he could play well.
Yep.
And Rory is your.
I think it would be a surprise if Rory played well. I'll put it that way.
What's your percent chance that he WDs?
Rory?
Yes.
He's
one fesky swing away.
You said that he's such a great driver, he shouldn't be anywhere near that.
Even the great driver is going to be in the fesky once or twice. Rory said, after his comment, he's going to be in there.
Exactly. You should pack your bags and go home if you're in the fesky. His first tee shot's going to be sniped into the junk and having to hack out of there.
Well, on that,
I don't think he's going to do it. WD though, no.
Okay, neither do I. But you never know. That's the thing.
That's another reason to be down on him. He's not even he's hitting maybe a bag of balls tops to warm up on the range.
No, but he said he's played 9 rounds in the last 11 days or whatever.
But he's not doing the repetitive motion of actually warming up for a round.
I don't think that might not be a bad thing on the U.S. Open. You could burn yourself into the ground by Wednesday afternoon.
You and I can play rounds too, but when the score actually matters.
Yeah, that is true. That is a problem with my game currently.
I kind of need to warm up. that's just me personally.
Well, you've almost convinced me, but I still think I remain the golfchannel.com Rory apologist that says, man, when it's clicking, look out, world. But
I want to be on him. I mean, I think Quail Hollow, he's just a slam dunk. It's just a matter of can we get there healthy? Can we get there? Him in form.
Yeah. The re-aggravation of the injury concerns me. I don't mind hurting yourself originally. I totally get it.
We're in mid-June
now. But the fact that you still can't shake it from something that basically happened in December,
yep,
that's a problem.
That is a problem. So. It's looking like a lost year if he gets hurt again.
Yeah. That's a spicy take right there. We'll pump the brakes for now, but
yeah,
you're down on Rory. J-Day lives to fight another
holding
day.
Steady.
Yeah. And we're both about to go over the cliff with the Ricky Fowler bandwagon, along with several others. It's just one of those things where you get this guy, and so many people are on it, and no one is ever right about it at the same time, and you know it's just not going to work out. So condolences to Ricky Fowler, because the Kiss golf media has collectively ruined your chances of winning the U.S. Open. So on that note, we're going to put a pin in this. Thank you much, Ryan Lavner, for joining us. I will let you run down the hall here at the wonderful Media Hotel before we circle back in the morning and head back to the beautiful farmland of Aaron, Wisconsin, and kick off this U.S. Open. We're finally going to have a ball in the air that means something.
Thank God. I hate practice rounds. It's all just we're just teasing ourselves. Let's actually see some golf.
There you go. Well, for Ryan, I'm Will. Thanks for listening to this GolfChannel.com podcast, and we will see you next time.